Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's in Waco, Texas, and with Zwicker Consulting. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to talk about things down on the farm and the cash grain situation. And then we'll take up the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. Incorporated in Kansas City. We'll hear a bit about crude oil, its price, and food. So crude, food, and grains, all in today's edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Thursday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were down 2.5 cents at the end of the day at $3.78 and a quarter. The March 2 and a quarter lower at $3.88, and the May at $3.93 and a half down 2.5 cents. July corn 2 3/4 lower at $3.97 and a quarter. December at $4.02 and a quarter. Down a penny and 3/4. Soy complex 6.5 cents lower as it closed out the day on a weak close at $8.98 and 3/4. January at $9.01 down 8.5, and the March at 8 3/4 lower. $9.02 and 3/4 was the final trade. And November beans of next year down 8 1/4 at $8.98 and 3/4. Will be interesting to see what Dan Zwicker has to say about the close for the afternoon. Bean meal futures are down $2.70 at $3.07.80, and bean oil is 33 cents lower at $28.85. Soft red winter wheat down 4 cents at $4.90 and 3/4, and July at $5.03 and 3/4 down 4 cents. The hard red December down 5 at $4.75 and a half, and July at $5.10 and 3/4 down 4 3/4. Feeder cattle futures at $195.12 and a half, 87 1/2 cents higher their last trade. November up $1.80 at $193.22 and a half. Live cattle at $140.02 and a half in the October, up a nickel at this hour. December down 12.5 cents at $143.02 and a half, and lean hogs for the day in the December contract finished 62.5 cents lower. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website at willag.org, or you can visit farmassetsconference.com. At either place, you can pick up a ticket for our Farm Assets Conference. It's Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 24th in Normal, Illinois. Tickets are just $30.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Ethanol futures are 0.4 cents higher to $1.55 and a half. December crude oil at $45.45, up 25 cents a barrel. The wholesale price of gasoline, 3 2/10 cents higher to $1.31 and 2 cents. And diesel fuel at $1.46 and 7 cents, a penny and 7 cents higher. That's also known as heating oil. Natural gas at $2.37 and 7 cents, down 2 7/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 338 points higher at 17,394. The U.S. dollar is still gaining. It's at 96.45. That's up 1.377. And the gold futures for the day are currently trading at $1,165. They're down $2.10. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny. A high of 74 today, a northeast wind at about 6 miles an hour. Cloudy this evening, a low of 53. That northeast wind will persist and kick up to about 8 to 10. And then Friday, a 40% chance of rainfall after 1 in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy and 73. An east-southeast wind by then at 6 to 14, gusting to 18. Friday night, showers are likely, cloudy with a low of around 60 degrees. South winds at 10 to 15, gusting as high as 20. Chance of precipitation set at 60%, and Saturday a 40% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and we'll have a high near 71, southwest winds at 9 to 15. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from Drew Lerner.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's take a look now at some of the numbers with Dan Zwicker from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joining us on this 22nd day of October. Looks like you're going to get a little rainfall, more than we are maybe in the near future, Dan. It's been dry, and you guys either have it all or nothing appears.
Yeah, we're under a flood watch, which I don't know what a flood watch means for Texas, but I know we have to have about 100% chance of rain to actually get any rain. Those 30 and 40% chances of rain really don't amount to too much. You could plan a wedding around those, and you could miss those. But, I guess the La Nina, El Nino weather pattern, right, which dominantly gives the southern portion of the United States the heaviest rainfall amounts, and that showed up in the National Weather Service's a winter outlook that we're going to be above normal on precip, and I think we're in the camp for below normal temperatures, just what I need, but cold and wet down here, but that seems to be the case anyway, and the rain is going to be welcomed because I don't think we've had a good rain since Memorial Day. And we've got burn bans down here, and I've got about three piles of brush that need to be burnt. So I'm hoping we get enough rain to get the burn ban lifted so I can get that stuff burnt before winter.
It isn't that always the case. Hey, tell me a little bit about this close on the soybean market. They faded more than they had during the day, though. A couple of cents isn't that big a deal. However, when they close below what you consider, you know, a threshold that may only be important in the mind, $9 for the November contract, it may very well mean something. That close was at 8.98¾ today.
Well, it may mean something. I mean, when you look at raw chart data, just look at today's price range and the way we closed. We were higher in the overnights and early session. We came out with a good weekly export sales number with additional soybean sales. So the demand side of the equation was very strong. But what hammered it was really glaring on the screen when you look at the screen is a 1,300-point jump in the dollar or 130, depending upon who you talk to and how they express it. But we've got one of the biggest up days in the dollar that we have seen in some time. And I think that cast a real negative tone to all ag commodities because the market has been worried for some time of a weakening world economy, and what goes along with that would be weakening demand for commodities, especially from the United States. So that all kind of came together and turned everything lower into the close. So when you look at your bean chart, I'm not too concerned that it closed maybe below the $9 level. But we did have what we call as a hook reversal to the downside. You know, we had our high that we had here back on the 14th of the month. I had a high about 9.19¾. And then we had the break on into October 20th down here around 8.89. And then we were on the verge of making the next leg to the upside. And in this case, that failed and turned down with a reversal down. So when you just look at that by itself, it would indicate that soybean market now is probably at least in for a minimum of a 2 or 3 day type corrective measure to the downside. Maybe going through the weekend, and then we'll see what harvest completion is, how much movement comes in the western corn belt as soybean harvest winds down. But that one day doesn't necessarily make a trend. And when you draw trend lines on both corn and soybeans, we are in a sideways to higher market. It may be more sideways to slightly higher, but you can draw parallel lines, and we are climbing gradually higher out of those September lows. But today's action with the reversal down in soybeans, that is also going to be the case in December corn. However, December corn did give a buy signal, so I don't know how valid this reversal down is. We'll find out tonight and tomorrow. It wouldn't be surprising to me to see this reversal down being it shook off by a lot of your black box traders, and they may just step up and buy the thing and kind of negate whatever today's little reversal down is. But today's action by itself is viewed as negative. And my guess is that when we start the overnight session, we're going to start soft, and then we'll kind of go from there and see how much follow through to the downside we have.
I suppose the good news is that soybean harvest is mostly wrapped up. So if nothing else, basis may have to lead this market. It's sideways to higher, I would think.
Well, it's going to, and it's even in corn. We've almost got two corn belts now.
Right.
We have the eastern corn belt where all the demand's at. You've got the river systems in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio with the Ohio River, Illinois, and the Mississippi. That's your export market. And then you've got the big processor market in Decatur, and then you've got a lot of small ethanol plants scattered throughout Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So you've got a lot of good demand there. Yes, we do have a big processing plant in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, but that's really not too far west of the Mississippi River. That's only west of the Mississippi River, probably by 45 minutes or so. But the production seems to have shifted more so up into Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and we're getting more production out of Nebraska. And while they do have ethanol plants out there and processing plants, it's not to the extent that we have in the eastern Corn Belt. Now, why that's happened, I think that's a good farm policy discussion. I think it's because of the insurance company. I think the actuarial tables that are really not fiscally sound is encouraging production in the western Corn Belt that normally would not be in production. But that's always been the case with farm policy. Yeah. You always end up favoring one region over the other. And so the eastern Corn Belt is going to have tighter basis levels. It's going to be, I'd say, eastern Corn Belt farmers need to probably pay more attention to the cash market than maybe the futures market, because that is where the opportunities are going to be with some better basis levels and a normal seasonal recovery, because the eastern Corn Belt, everything is pretty well being tucked away. I understand, maybe you travel a lot, but I don't understand. They tell me that there's no piles of corn around. If that's the case,
well, the Andersons has about 4 billion or 4 million bushel underground. So
they got 4 million. Well, yeah. That's probably about only a third of what they normally have.
No, but, that's what they normally would get. That's a big pile for them.
Yeah, that's a big pile for them.
Yeah, they get two out back in two.
I do think that the supplies in the eastern Corn Belt are definitely, and then farmers tell me that they all ended up harvesting their corn at 13% or 14%, and their beans were harvested at 10 and 9%. Now, I don't know what all that means to overall yield, but it can't be good anyway. And it'll be interesting to see what USDA does with that, I guess, on the November report.
Sure will. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. One item, and I'm not sure that I have this all right, but I think I will try to find it and repost it to the willag.org website. Gary Schnicke years ago had done some research based on the 1996 Freedom to Farm Act. That would have been the farm policy from them. And then crop insurance, I think, was involved as well, and how cropping practices across the United States had changed. And it was wheat, of course, and if you start to think about those areas that really have changed a lot, Minnesota and the Dakotas, that lost so many acres in that process. And I'll try to put that up on our website at willag.org so that you can review it as it relates to the discussion we just had with Dan Zwicker. Speaking of those kinds of discussions, you can see one in person if you'd like on November the 24th at our Farm Assets Conference. We'll have several of our analysts there, including Sue Martin, from Webster City, Iowa, along with many other things. Check it all out at farmassetsconference.com. You can buy your tickets today if you'd like at 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with crude oil because all things are energy in the end. After a year of suffering the economic consequences of the oil price slump, OPEC is finally, it appears, on the cusp of choking off growth in U.S. crude output. The nation's production is almost back down to the level pumped in November 2014 when the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, that's OPEC, switched its strategy to focus on battering competitors and reclaiming market share. As U.S. market share has declined, demand for OPEC's crude has grown, ending 2 years of retreat, that according to the EIA, or the International Energy Agency. From crude, we move to a couple of food stories. Subway Restaurants announced yesterday the company would begin the transition to meat raised without antibiotics next year. The move will be phased in over the next decade and follow similar moves by rivals like McDonald's, Taco Bell, and Panera Bread Company. In the announcement, Subway says it has already begun the transition to serving only protein from animals that have never received antibiotics. The company estimates that all chicken used by Subway will be antibiotic-free by the end of 2016. Let's stay with food for the moment. The Center for Consumer Freedom has launched a campaign against Chipotle's new marketing strategy. The Chubby Chipotle campaign, it says, is tricking people into thinking its burritos are healthier by advertising its meat as antibiotic-free, meaning from animals, of course, raised without antibiotics. However, this year, the burrito chain began sourcing pork from Europe that comes from animals that may have been given antibiotics. Director of Research at the Center for Consumer Freedom, Bill Kogan, says consumers shouldn't let Chipotle trick them into thinking their burritos are healthier by saying they're antibiotic-free, because federal regulations are designed to ensure all meat served in restaurants and sold in supermarkets is antibiotic-free. Finally today, we'll close out the news segment with Washington, D.C. Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan says he's open to becoming Speaker of the House if the Republican Party can move from being an opposition party, in his words, to a proposition party and become a unified conference. Ryan, who is the current chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, is a supporter, by the way, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and a long-term federal highway funding bill. Earlier this year, he said approval of the TPP would allow the United States to write the rules of the global economy. Politico reports that if Ryan were to become Speaker of the House, it could increase the chances for TPP approval. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. There you can purchase your tickets for the November 24 Farm Assets Conference, or you can call this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Or buy your tickets online at farmassetsconference.com. Tickets are just $30. We'll continue down the subject line of food for the afternoon. Senate agriculture leaders are still hoping to pass a GMO labeling bill this year after the House passed a voluntary labeling bill in July. So far, Democrats on the committee are not following suit. Here's what the top Senate Ag Democrat, Debbie Stabenow, says the problem is for Democrats. It's about supporting a purely voluntary labeling bill.
I share the concern about the difficulty in doing business across our country if 50 different states have 50 different standards and requirements. And frankly, it won't work. However, we also need to recognize and respect the interests of many American consumers who care deeply about where and how their food is produced.
Stabenow commits to passing a bill by the end of this year that deals with a 50-state patchwork of rules that has a national system of disclosure for consumers and does not stigmatize biotechnology. That leaves the question of how quickly. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley said this earlier in the week.
Senator Hovind's doing all the work on this, so you got to trust his judgment. And he's been talking to enough Democrats that he can't hardly get any Democrat supporter, even on language that revises the Pompeo bill. Then the best answer is the Pompeo bill doesn't have a chance in the United States Senate.
Grassley says he thinks the environmental lobby is stopping the House voluntary GMO labeling bill. However, FDA officials told Senate Ag Committee members the FDA is confident after 20 years of review, genetically modified foods in the United States are as safe as non-GMO foods, and that the courts have backed FDA's legal position that GMO traits by themselves do not require labeling. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market now. On the line is Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, and Channel Seeds. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Tell me what your thoughts are on the marketplace today.
Well, I think, obviously, we started out the day on a little better note than what we finished up, and I think we just kind of ran out of buyers on the day. But for the most part, you know, I think the week has actually gone fairly good considering the time of year that we're in. And I think, you know, we probably have a little more of a heightened chance of the rallying effort to begin here sooner rather than later, given that we're over halfway done with both corn and bean harvest.
Do you expect a seasonal rally from this point forward through November?
You know, I think that we've got a pretty decent shot at something like that. How much that is, I don't know. Of course, everyone remembers last year when we rallied significantly over a dollar with beans, you know, and 70 cents on corn. In the midst of the biggest crops we'd ever raised. And, yeah, I don't think anything like that's going to happen this year, but I do think when we look at the corn situation that both U.S. and world projections for carryout as compared to a year ago are a fair amount smaller. So, you know, I think that a person has to understand with prices being actually below the insurance price from last year, 415, you know, as far as our D16 goes, I think we've probably got a little bit of room to go to the upside, both on cash and fall corn.
Hey, thanks for taking the time with me today.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. And if everything works well, I just posted that Freedom to Farm and Acreage Changes website to our website at willag.org that we talked about with Gary Schnitke a few years ago, and that was referenced by Dan Zwicker.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Nut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, Ozzie Wilkinson died. An American blacksmith and inventor, he harnessed water power in his Rhode Island shop to make farm tools and to cut nails. In 1843, Stephen Babcock was born. An American agricultural research chemist, he is often called the father of scientific daring. He developed a test named after him, which easily measures the butterfat content of milk. The test provided an adequate standard by which fair payment for milk could be determined, which had the domino effects of aiding factory manufacture of cheese and butter. In 1877, Frederick Twort was born. An English bacteriologist, he was the first to publish a method for isolating and culturing the bacteria that causes John's disease, or chronic dysentery of cattle. And in 1896, Charles Glenn King was born. An American biochemist, he was a pioneer in the field of nutrition research who isolated vitamin C. King also established the functional role of vitamin B, and he made significant contributions over a 40-year career in the areas of fat and enzymes. King's public service activities included creation of USDA's Plant, Soil, and Nutrition Laboratory, and he helped establish the Food and Nutrition Board. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Now here's Drew Lerner with today's Ag Weather Forecast.
Rain will evolve in the western Corn Belt during the course of the day today and will spread across portions of the central and eastern sections of the region as we go from Friday into Saturday. The precipitation is not expected to be equally distributed across the region. Some areas will get more precipitation than others, and the majority will see just enough, though, to disrupt harvest progress across parts of the region for just a little while. Now, as dry as the ground is across the Midwest, the odds are pretty high that we will not be out of the fields for very long. Most everybody will see net drying conditions occur rather swiftly following the storm system. However, there will be a follow-up disturbance that will occur as we get into the latter part of the weekend and into early next week that promises more rain for the region. So farming activity will be slowed down quite a bit as we move through this next 7-day period, and enough precipitation will fall to see an improvement in the overall establishment of some of the soft wheat crop across parts of the lower Midwest, and that'll be good news in itself. The general forecast goes like this. We will see rain in the western Corn Belt today. The majority of the precipitation will be focused on areas coming up out of Kansas into parts of the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota. Now, a lot of the precipitation will not reach those northern areas until later this evening and overnight tonight, and at the same time, we'll probably not see any precipitation of consequence occurring to the east of the Mississippi River until sometime probably on Friday morning or very late Thursday night. The majority of the precipitation this first 24-hour period will run from a quarter to three-quarters of an inch. There'll be some localized 1 to 2-inch amounts, and it also looks as though the amounts that occur in the eastern Midwest from Friday into Saturday will probably run from a tenth of an inch upwards to 0.5 inch, with some potential for localized amounts between a half inch and maybe an inch and a quarter. Now, those greater rain totals that occur Friday into Saturday will probably be very localized into the lower portions of the region, so areas in southern Illinois, maybe southeastern Missouri, a couple spots in southern Indiana, or even western Kentucky will probably be the areas most prone to the heavier amounts of rainfall. The lightest precipitation will occur just to the north of that region across the heart of the Midwest, and some of those areas are probably not going to see much precipitation at all out of this particular frontal boundary. Now, a follow-up system is expected to come out of Texas as we get into the late weekend and the early part of next week. This storm system is going to be fed by a hurricane that is named Patricia that is going to be slamming into central Mexico early Saturday morning. The storm is expected to be a major hurricane, and it will have a tremendous amount of moisture associated with it, and all that will stream across central Mexico and into Texas and to help to enhance a storm system for the lower Mississippi River basin and eventually the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest as we get out towards the end of the weekend and on into early early next week. Widespread precipitation will come with this event. The heaviest amounts will be down in Texas. Maybe some 7-inch amounts will be possible down that way. The storm system will not start its debut into the Midwest, though, until sometime late on Sunday. And at that time, we'll likely see precipitation increasing from south to north across the area. The majority of the precipitation will be focused on Monday and Tuesday. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.